Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Cloud Security Alliance's podcast series, CSA Security Update. I'm your host, John DeMaria. CSA is the world's leading organization dedicated to defining and raising awareness of best practices to help ensure a secure cloud computing environment. We harness the subject matter expertise of industry, associations, governments, and our members to offer the best in research, education, certification, events, and products. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to CSA Security Update. I am your host, John DeMaria, and today we're going to be talking about business email compromise, and I have someone here, Ken Dunham, who is the Senior Technical Director, Cyber Operations for Optiv. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, John.
And Ken, you have quite a diverse background here. Ken has, been involved in many issues, including threat intelligence, incident response, just really looking deep into subject matters like we're going to talk about today. He's authored multiple books back in the 1990s. He's involved in authoring the Bigelow series, which had to do with antivirus. And he is he's a ISSA International Distinguished Fellow, which is close to my heart because I've been involved many years with the ISSA. And both of our good friend Jim Rebus obviously was involved in the ISSA for many years as well. So good stuff. And I was really intrigued. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because I was really intrigued when I had read your blog on the subject of business email compromise and fraud and how it's exploiting the cloud. Obviously very interested in that subject matter, but just as important as this issue is really built around, people, process, and technology. Sometimes we spend a lot of time talking about technology. In this particular case, technology alone isn't necessarily the issue. BEC scams obviously aren't going to go away anytime soon. And it's really sort of a low-tech, type of financial fraud. And that's the other thing, the financial industry perspective of this is very intriguing as well. So maybe you can start out sort of explaining the technology or problem statement, and just sort of give us that overview of BEC, the issue.
You bet. Thank you. Well, business email compromise or BEC fraud was first officially tracked by the FBI when it became a serious problem in 2013. There's been more than 100 countries in which BEC fraud has been identified. Losses are in the billions. And in January 2015, they had identified a 1,300%, that's 1,300% increase in fraud since when they started to track it just a couple of years previous. And of course, wow. It's 2019 now. And at that time, we'd even seen, like just a couple of years ago, losses that were known in the $3 billion range. And it all comes down to email works, social engineering, tricking people. We all have too much to do. We're all too busy. It's not hard to create something that looks legitimate. But what's scary now is they're doing more than just the email. They're setting up infrastructure and attacks in the cloud that allow for them to orchestrate lots of attacks at the same time without you knowing it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So I when reading your blog, I found it kind of intriguing. So you explained these, what you called four distinct phases of BEC. So Can you dig a little deeper into that to help us understand a little bit more?
Yeah. If you imagine a spectrum that goes from opportunistic attacks to highly targeted attacks, you'll see that there are a variety of bad actors that do things that are either opportunistic or somewhere in between or highly targeted. And if you look at the technical stages as defined by the FBI, there's the stage of, you know, figuring out who's your target. Let's say I want to attack John. What can I learn about John, right? I start Googling. Maybe I have information on, or I have a compromise of one of his affiliates, but I do whatever I can do to go figure out more about this opportunity and assets that he may hold or relationships that he may have. There are certain social networking sites that are fantastic for bad actors for exactly that. So be careful what you post out there. And then the second stage is grooming, where they would typically go through either spear phishing emails or some kind of a telephone call. And they're going to utilize typical tactics of trying to make it urgent or important and certainly trusted so that you'll go ahead and click through or do whatever is necessary for them to then perform a compromise. And their end goal is to start to exchange information towards a wire transfer, because they know that in various organizations, like say real estate or banking and these kinds of places where there are wire transfers taking place, that it's common from a policy and SOP perspective to just get emails with attachments that have been signed that show that the right people have signed off on it before a wire transfer is done. And so that's a weakness in the way that we manage our people and our process. And they're trying to use technology to get in there and then manipulate and exploit that for lots of wire transfers under your nose without you knowing it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that's what's really intriguing. I mean, I guess the good news, bad news is it seems fairly simple, but that's good news. Also the bad news, because there's probably a lot of people, it seems like while it's simple, it's really taking advantage of the people, who can really stop it from happening. It seems to get through the technology fairly easy in a lot of cases. And so I guess that's what, to take this to the next step, to help us understand a little bit more, dig a little bit deeper, is maybe you could take us through a use case or some sort of scenario that puts us into a understandable process and help us understand, you know, a scenario or use case where this actually takes place.
Yeah, that's a great way to go about it, John, because it is hard to connect all the dots. But the bad guys have done this ahead of time. That's their strategic plan. They have orchestration and automation in place, and they want to strike fast, get as much as they can, and get out. So it's more than just an email that you get that you shouldn't have double-clicked on. It's more than just the trickiness that goes there. What these guys have done, for example, they've stepped up their game technically. In a case that we saw a year ago, they set up a rogue domain, which is pretty common in the world of phishing, right? But in this case, instead of like legitimatebankinc.com, it was legitimatebanklnc.com. Visually, it looks the same. They set up a server with a subdomain for auto-discover. They used this fancy new Unicode, Puny code-based domain structure. They did a lot of things to subvert signature-based and existing security controls so that they could do an injection into the system and control your emails. So what it looked like from start to finish is emails are sent to the target, somebody double clicks, usually two or three people in an organization would compromise an endpoint. And then once they get in there, they take your credentials and they pivot to the cloud. They go into your O365 instance, they log in, and then they set up a bunch of rules and things to filter and control traffic and emails. And they're literally sending out emails from you. So if I'd compromised your account, John, I'd be sending out emails from your actual account without you knowing it to other people, and or getting these requests and things that are done and all legitimate, making it look like everything has been done according to the normal rules for processing of a wire transfer, with the end goal of sending it over to the person inside of the organization that actually does the wire transfer. They read the email, they see all the attachments, they're all signed. It looks like a legitimate email chain and dates and times. There's nothing to question. They perform the email transfer and nobody knows any to the wiser until a few weeks later, usually.
Yeah. And just, just for everyone's information. So Puni code is a special encoding used by web browser to convert Unicode characters to limited character sets of like ASCII codes. And it's supported by international domain, the IDN systems. So you can, for example, Chinese or whatever other language you want to use. But as you said, it you have these different domains that kind of look like the same one. And I guess the really scary thing is here, in today's modern world, where we have instant news, and social media and this instant news, we're constantly on our phones looking at things and constantly on the internet. And I guess they're taking advantage of the fact that nobody really looks that close at things anymore, right?
I mean,
they just kind of see something that looks like good news or looks like something they need to be addressing, and they just click on it.
Well, we're all terribly busy and get way too many emails in particular. And it's hard to shut that filter off, right? And what's legitimate, what's not. And it's a very difficult challenge. And all it takes is for somebody to get this email and then double click on it. And what's sad is I've been in cases where I've talked to people in the field that have had a BEC compromise. And I've even had some employees say, I didn't even know I had an Office 365 account in the cloud, because they don't use it. They only used whatever's on their desktop, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And it was only set up for, say, four or five people that are mobile that have to have some kind of solution on their phone. But everybody in the whole place has it, even though some never use it. Well, that kind of goes back to some basics on who needs to have access or have these ports opened or have these accounts. Is everybody in the cloud in your O365 admin? Why is that? Do they need admin, or can we lower those permissions? What about, some of the, just the basics? I know you and I had talked previously about some things with, CSA and the STAR program and that sort of thing. And people just tend to ignore a lot of the basics because they just want functionality and they're busy. And unfortunately, what happens here is there was one case, for example, where a customer said, well, we use all virtualized systems. We don't care if it gets compromised. Every day we refresh the operating systems. Well, that's great and wonderful, but you're using the cloud and your credentials work in the cloud. And even though the endpoint is cleaned from the malware, your credentials weren't included. You didn't do good like identity access management, configuration and change management. When you have an incident, you should change all your credentials accordingly to whatever was touched. So the bad guys are wreaking havoc in the cloud and you don't even know, and you don't do any logging. You have no visibility there. You don't even know how to do it, or it's farmed out to some third party vendor and you're shifting liability. But meanwhile, your assets and your money are all leaving the building.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point that you touched on that you kind of is taking it to the cloud. Some people really think that it's shifting liability and security, but it's really not, is it?
No. I mean, from a liability perspective, like, it's not our fault if somebody tries to sue us or something. I mean, there is some benefit to that kind of a contractual relationship with a third-party provider. But when we talk about third-party risk, it's really like holding hands. And if somebody has polio and you're holding hands with them and you haven't been inoculated, that's a high risk thing to do. You kind of want to check and or not hold hands. And so in this world of cloud, how many providers do we have now that are, out there? And what ends up happening is our quote unquote cloud security is a mist. We don't really know who all we're associated with or who they use for their services and provisions. We certainly haven't looked at the contractual and people and configuration and use requirements. And it's rare. Like, I know one large global organization that I respect that purchased cloud access and did security testing for 2 years. That's 2 years, okay, over 700 days-ish of testing before they put any actual data into the cloud. Nobody does that. I'm just saying. Most everybody just buys it, throws stuff up there, and, oh, I didn't know my credentials or my sensitive docs were up there, and then they just got owned. You have to think about security proactively from the get-go if you want to be the most successful.
And I like your scenario about the polio. I'm probably going to steal that, but because we talked to a lot of people. I've moved it to the cloud. You know, why should I worry about it? What's you know, that's why I moved to the cloud, so I don't have to worry about it. But as you say, you have to at least be aware of what they're doing, how they're doing it. So
it's important to have an architectural plan as well. Like, what should go in the cloud, right? I have certain assets that are very important to me that I would never want to have, like, say, my credentials or sensitive documents, contracts, whatever it might be, right? Your crown jewels, figure out what those are. And those should probably not be in the cloud. And if they do go to the cloud, then maybe it needs to be provisioned differently. Perhaps those documents are have some kind of special encryption or additional layers of authentication required to be able to access or store or send them back and forth, as opposed to other documents that are not as sensitive, not as big of a deal on crown jewels. How many times have we heard of that case where, oh, everything was in the cloud and some low-level employee gets compromised and it gives them access to everything in there? And they shouldn't have had that kind of access, but nobody really thought about it. They just put it up there like a great big data lake, and they're glad they can access it, but they're taking a huge risk. There's accepted risk that is unspoken.
Yeah, and it actually leads into my next thought I had as you were talking there is, you know, through all these experiences you've had and these different scenarios that you've worked through, I'm sure there was probably a lot of lessons learned that obviously came out of that. And so I'd like to tap into your expertise and experience and maybe give us some of that lessons learned. And more importantly, you know, what are some of the prevention recommendations that you can offer in terms of adoption and any new security solutions?
Yeah. Well, I'd say conceptually high level, we tend to be like kids at Christmas. I'm going to get a bike for Christmas, right? But that's what we do in security. We say, I need to have a IDS solution, or I need to get an endpoint solution. And so we're always kind of wanting or saying we need to have a tool to solve our problems. But realistically, it's people, process, and technology. And technology always comes last in my list. If I got really great people and I have a pretty good process and okay technology, I'm probably going to do way better than somebody with the, you know, platinum version of whatever tool that they've purchased and attempted to implement. And I've often seen, for example, really amazing tools with incredible functionality, but people and process didn't configure it properly. So the tool never gets used or leveraged in a way where it could be effective. Again, the people and the process components are critical, and they should be involved as early as they can be up front. This is just a general best practice, but it's true. Like, if you're looking at cloud solutions, or say you've already adopted those and you don't know where you're at in your security posture, someone needs to be able to answer that question from a governance perspective. So champion that, socialize that, have those discussions. When you look at BEC fraud, a couple of things come to mind immediately. First off, we know that say there was an attachment of malware or hostile URL or something of that nature, that it's going to likely get past some security controls at some point, because there's so many attacks and there's a lot of signature-based controls that are easily subverted. We know the technology will fail. So what is your number one way to spot and stop and prevent an attack at that point? It's your people. So what are you doing for continuous ongoing monitoring and just-in-time training for anti-phishing and that sort of thing? Are your people aware of the most common types of BEC and other kinds of phishing threats and what they look like and what the trends are that are taking place? Do you have a culture of motivating people and encouraging them to practice security with one another? Or do you tend to slap people on the wrist? Is it negative? Because it needs to be a positive, motivated in culture. Otherwise, people won't do it. And then looking at the cloud, any cloud solutions you do have, what are you doing in terms of just basic auditing and permissions and logging and that sort of thing? In most cases, when I've seen deployments in the cloud, it's just working and nobody looks and they don't even know how to do it, which is a little bit embarrassing. but like in the case of this BEC fraud, they were shoving emails that shouldn't have been in the system that they were trying to conceal and hide into the RSS folder in the cloud. And they had rules in there for auto forwarding and deleting and managing of emails as they would come and go before you'd ever see it anywhere else. There shouldn't be any kind of unusual filter rules or weird folders or a bunch of files where they shouldn't be. Somebody needs to be auditing and looking for that. And you can read my blog or view online, just a little bit of quick Googling, you'll know what to look for. But have you looked? And the answer is most people have not.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think we've established humans are the weakest link in BEC attacks. And of course, there's other areas in the organization, including, of course, you know, we have our insider attacks. So the person behind the firewall is actually the bad guy. And then, you know, it's about setting up, as you said, the people, process, technology. And so for, you know, in the CSA Star, where we use these three pillars of understanding that, you know, using standards, you know, preferably international or industry-based standards that are proven. As you mentioned, you know, there's an assessment process that continue to go through. And then we move into sort of this continuous monitoring, which is sort of an upcoming new generation of monitoring, where, you know, we're not just doing these point in time things, but we have an ongoing continuous monitoring and understanding how your system is maturing over time. And that way you're including, as you said, all of the people, process, and technology. I think you've helped us understand the importance of people and process. So we talk about transparency, cloud service providers actually telling everyone what they're doing, how they're doing it, and evidence of that. And a lot of cloud service providers are, in some cases, you might think, well, they're probably more secure than the users, but the users don't know that. So what would you say? I mean, how important does transparency of the cloud service providers fit into this whole equation?
That's a great question. How do you know if they're any good, right? Do you really want to do business with them? I've done this, for example, with my personal internet, and some of the personal internet providers are pretty horrible. And I would tracert the network and map it back to their infrastructure. They didn't like me very much after that. But the answer is I could show they didn't do load balancing. They weren't providing the proper services or the throughput. So you have to spend the time to do an evaluation. If you don't know where to start and you've never done that, then ask around. Reach out to me or other people. Do a little bit of Googling. Find out, like, what can I do to size up a cloud provider, or somebody has a certain kind of a solution set you're looking for. What's your checklist or your assessments and or expectations or things you'd put into a request for proposal or RFP? And start to get an idea of what should I be looking for? Because it's more than just cheap hosting or something, right? Which is why most people get into it. It's more affordable, more effective. I don't have to worry about staffing it, you know, that kind of thing. What about service level agreements? You know, a few years back, there was a large bank that was suffering cross-site scripting vulnerability injections into their website that was third-party hosted, and pornography was being shown on their websites. That was pretty bad reputationally, and it went on for a month because they didn't have the legal right in their contract to force them to make changes in the development. Ouch.
Wow.
That hurts. So. Yeah. What do your SLAs look like? How fast do they need to get back to you? What are the uptime requirements? If they fail to meet the contract, you know, how is that going to be recompensed or managed? What's their track record? Do they have any recommendations? What's the reviews from other people? You have to decide how much effort you want to put into it based on your level of effort and the types of assets that you're going to put into the cloud. And in some cases, you can do the quick and easy and there's not a lot at risk. But if I do anything that has a lot at risk, I'm going to recommend usually a hybrid or a blended environment where I've taken the time to size up my crown jewels and my architecture and my approach, and I'm going to reduce risk by making sure that my most essential items are the most well protected. They may not go to the cloud, or if they do, they'll have extra controls. And I may have some solutions in one cloud provider and some in a different one to stagger and offset my risk. But I need to think about how do I reduce risk overall strategically?
Yeah, and those are some of the basic things I think you get out of the self-assessment, the CAKE and self-assessment, the CCM is just very basic questions about what you should be doing and are you doing that? And I think that opens up the door and sort of makes you think a little bit more about what you're doing. And then, of course, there's people like yourself that are out there to have a deeper discussion on that. I think it's critical, and education obviously is probably one of the most cost-effective ways of prevention as well. So,
another way to look at the CSA STAR program is it starts with ownership. The level one self-assessment is you taking ownership. You know your crown jewels and your priorities better than anyone else. So you take ownership. And then after that, level two is help someone else to come in and give you a second opinion that's from outside of the organization. Invaluable, because once you're ready, and then they challenge you, you can kind of argue or fight back a little bit. And now this is an amazing dialogue of helping you to refine and mature towards optimization and continuous monitoring. And that's how every security program that is effective runs in some capacity. And that's what you should be doing from the get-go if you're adopting cloud, or if you haven't done it, get out there and start doing it now. It's not too late. Start now. You might discover you've got fraud under your noses, because those regular phishing attacks that you looked at, once you know what BEC fraud looks like and you're educated and you've taken ownership, that first step, what used to just be a generic phishing now becomes a much bigger deal. It's potentially targeted BEC fraud, and we're talking six figures and up for every instance. We're talking massive scale against a lot of liability against your company. That completely changes the risk landscape. The severity and the damage associated with that kind of risk goes through the roof. And at that point, then you're going to want to prioritize and deal with that type of phishing email very differently than all the others.
And with, I would imagine, depending on what type of information they end up getting, with GDPR today, you don't have a month or 3 months or a year to discover that something happened, right? You need to know like now.
Yeah, I mean, GDPR is all about privacy, right? Yeah. And there are increased regulatory oversight components for anybody that does business in the EU. But bottom line is that should be a core component of what you're doing anyway. It just normal management. Have you taken the time to figure out what are you dealing with? How are you dealing with it? Are you informing people ethically and responsibly? And as long as you're doing the best practices of self-assessment, third-party assessments, and trying to mature in that way, then you're probably going to be compliant or coming close to compliance with GDPR and other things. Of course, it does take a specialist to make sure you've done that properly. And you'd want to follow the same kind of model like we do in the CSA STAR program.
Okay, great stuff. Well, this is a really good subject. I'm glad we got to cover it, because it goes into different areas that a lot of people, as you say, sometimes we talk too much about technology and don't spend enough time on people and process. If anyone wants to continue this discussion with you, what's the best way to contact you?
They can contact me on LinkedIn. That's just an easy way. I'm pretty Googleable, and I'd be happy to work with you and help you out.
Okay, awesome. And as always, you can go to cloudsecurityalliance.org and get any other information you want at info@cloudsecurityalliance.org. And we'll hook you up there as well with all our research on these subject matters moving forward. So Okay, really, really appreciate you. I know you're very busy. Appreciate you taking time out for today, and you know, we'll be carrying this on further, and really appreciate your input.
Thanks, John. As a follow-up, I'm going to send you an email with a couple of attachments. I just need you to click through and fill out those surveys for me. And that is a joke.
I was going to say,
be careful. It gets real out there.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
You bet.
Bye.
Yep. Bye.